Fisher. Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1. Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
The first question. Have I come to the wrong place? I just want to be ordinary and happy. I want a woman to love and to love me, friends to spend time with and enjoy. I don't want enlightenment. Have I come to the wrong place? Centuries of wrong upbringing have completely confused your mind about enlightenment. The very word seems to be unearthly, otherworldly. The very word seems to be something which is after death. Are for those who are already dead. This is absolutely wrong. If you want to be happy, there is no other way than enlightenment. If you want to be ordinary, nobody has ever been without enlightenment. If you want to love and loved, it is impossible without enlightenment. So you will have to understand my concept of enlightenment. It is just to be ordinary, healthy, aware, whole, total. Every mind is seeking some extraordinariness. That is what the ego is. Always trying to be somebody in particular. Always afraid of being nobody. Always afraid of emptiness. Trying to fill the inner void by everything and anything. So every human being is seeking extraordinariness, and that creates misery. That is not possible. Nobodiness is your very nature. Non-being is the very stuff you are made of. So howsoever you try, you will never succeed. Even Alexander failed. You cannot be somebody because that is not possible in the nature of things. You can only be nobody. But there is nothing wrong in being nobody. In fact, the moment you accept your nobodiness, immediately bliss starts flowing from you in all directions. Because misery disappears. Misery is the shadow of the ego, shadow of the ambitious mind. Misery means you are doing something impossible, and because you are failing in it, you are miserable. You are doing something unnatural, trying to do it and failing. Feel frustrated, miserable. Hell is nothing but the end result of an impossible, unnatural effort. Heaven is nothing but to be natural. You are nobody. You are born as a nobodyness, with no name, no form. You will die as a nobody. Name and form are just on the surface. Deep down, you are just a vast space. And it is beautiful. Because if you are somebody, you will be limited. It is good that God doesn't allow anybody to be somebody. If you are somebody, you will be finite, limited. You will be an imprisoned being. No, God doesn't allow that. He gives you the freedom of nobodiness, infinite, non-ending. But you are not ready. To me, enlightenment is all about this phenomena, to recognize, to realize, to accept the fact that one is a nobody. Suddenly, you stop trying the impossible. Suddenly, you stop pulling yourself by your shoelaces. You understand the absurdity of it, and you stop. And the laughter spreads on your being. Suddenly you are calm and collected. The very effort that you want to be somebody is creating trouble. And when you try to be somebody, you cannot love. An ambitious mind cannot love. It is impossible. Because he has to fulfill first his ambition. He has to sacrifice everything for it. He will go on sacrificing his love. Look at ambitious people. If they are after money, they always postpone love. Tomorrow, when they have accumulated a lot of money, then they will be in love. Right now it is impossible. It is not in any way practical. Right now they cannot afford it. Love is a relaxation. And they are running for something to achieve, a goal. Maybe it is money, maybe it is power, prestige, politics. How can they love now? They cannot be here and now. And love is a phenomenon of here and now. Love exists only in the present. Ambition exists in the future. Love and ambition never meet. You cannot love. And if you cannot love, how you can be loved by anybody else? Love is a deep communion of two beings who are ready to be together this moment, not tomorrow. Who are ready to be total in this moment and forget all past and future. Love is a forgetfulness of the past and the future and a remembrance of this moment, this throbbing moment, this alive moment. Love is the truth of the moment. Ambitious mind is never here. He is always on the go. How can you love a running man? He is always in a race, in a competition. He has no time. Or he thinks that somewhere in the future, when the goal is achieved, when he has attained the power he seeks, the riches he desires, then he will relax and love. This is not going to happen, because the goal will never be achieved. Ambition will never be fulfilled. It is not the nature of it to be fulfilled. You can fulfill one ambition, immediately thousands other ambitions arise out of it. Ambition never stops if you follow it. If you understand, it can stop right now. You give energy to it. How can you love? That's why people are so miserable, trying to be somebody, miserable because they are not getting love, miserable because they cannot love. Love is an ecstasy. Ecstasy of a no mind. Ecstasy of the present. Ecstasy of a non-ambitious state. Ecstasy of emptiness. Wherever lovers are, there is nobody. Only love exists. When two lovers meet, they are not two. They may appear two to you from the outside, but the inside story is totally different. They are not two. The moment they meet, the two-ness disappears. Only love exists and flows. How it is possible? Unless you are an emptiness within, a nothingness, so that there is no barrier. Nothing is in between you and your lover. If you are somebody and your lover or beloved is also somebody, then two persons are not meeting but four. Two real nobodies which are standing in the back, two somebodies, false egos, shaking hands, caressing, making gestures of love. It is a drama to look at, ridiculous. Whenever lovers meet, there are nobody. Two nobodies cannot be two. How can two nothingnesses be two? Nothingnesses have no demarcation line. A nothingness is a vastness. Two nothingnesses become one. Two somebodies remain two. That's why love becomes such an ugly affair. Love, which is called love by you, not by me. Your love is an ugly affair, the ugliest. It has to be so. It could have been the most beautiful phenomena in the world, but it has become the ugliest. Lovers constantly fighting, quarreling, creating misery for each other. Says Sartre, the other is hell. He is saying something about your love. Whenever you are alone, you feel relaxed. Whenever you are with the lover, a tension arises. You cannot live alone because the deepest nobodiness hankers. It has a thirst. A deep hunger. So you cannot remain alone. You have to move. You seek togetherness. But the moment you are together, it is a misery. All relationships create misery and nothing else, unless you are enlightened. Love becomes just a conflict, a quarrel. One by and by gets adjusted to it. That means one gets by and by dull, insensitive. That's why the whole world looks so dead, so stale. It stinks. All relationships have gone stale. They have become ugly. So if you want really to love and being loved, that is not possible right now as you are. You have to disappear. You have to leave so that a clean nothingness is left, fresh nothingness is left behind. Only then the flower of love can bloom. The seeds are there, but the ego is like a rock and the seeds cannot sprout on it. And you say you want to be ordinary, and you want to love, and you want friends, and you want to enjoy. Exactly, this is what enlightenment is all about. But if you go to the priests and to the preachers and to the organized religions and the churches, their enlightenment is different. They are against love. They are against ordinariness. They are against friendship. They are against enjoyment. They are against everything that your nature naturally seeks. They are the great poisoners. But if you have come to me, you have come to the right person. Right person in the sense that my enlightenment is of this world. I am not saying that there is no other world. I am not saying that the earthly existence is the only existence. No. Don't misunderstand me. But the other depends on this. The other world depends on this world. And the sky depends on this earth. If you want to move higher, you have to be rooted here in this earth deeper. You need roots into this life. Then flowers will come of the other life. The other life is not against this life. In fact, the other life is just the flowering of this life. God is not against the world. He is not outside it. He is in it, hidden in it. You need not go against the world to seek Him. If you go, you will never find Him. He is hidden here and now. You have to seek. You have to go deep into this existence. And only that is the way to find Him. This whole life, this whole existence is nothing but a temple. And He is hiding inside it. Don't escape from it. I am not against this life. In fact, I am not against anything. I am for everything. Because if it exists, there must be a purpose to it. God cannot create things without any purpose. He is not mad. Existence is very purposive, meaningful. If this life exists, it means the other life cannot exist without it. It is the base. But you carry your notions when you come to me. When you come to me and I talk about enlightenment, you understand me in the ways that you have been taught what enlightenment is. When you come to me and talk about renunciation, sannyas, you understand something else. not what I am saying. I have to use the language, and the words are all contaminated. They have been used millions of times by millions of people with different connotations, different meanings, and I am giving them different dimensions of meaning. Enlightenment is a man who is fully aware of his inner emptiness and is not fighting it. Rather, he enjoys it. It is blissful. Through the enjoyment of his own emptiness, he becomes available to others. Others can enjoy. Others can come and participate in his mystery. His doors are open. He invites friends, lovers, and he is ready to share. He is ready to give. When you give out of your emptiness, you are never afraid of giving, because you cannot exhaust the emptiness. You go on giving, you go on giving, you go on giving. It is always there. You cannot exhaust it. Only finite things can be exhausted. That's why they create miserliness. You are afraid to give. A man who feels he is empty, why he should be afraid to give? He can give him totally, himself totally. And unless that is possible, love is not possible. Love is a holy phenomenon. Love is not profane. Every love worth the name is sacred. And when you enter into love, you enter into the world of purity, innocence. When you love, you enter the temple of the divine. Enjoy. I am not for sadness and long faces. I am not here to make you more miserable. You are already too much. I am not here to give you more sadness. I am here to awake you to the bliss that is your birthright, that is naturally available to you, but you have forgotten how to approach it, and you are going in wrong directions. You seek somewhere where it is not. You seek it outside and it is inside. You seek it far away and it is near. You seek it in the distant stars and it is just in front of you. In English, there are two words, beautiful. One is obvious. Obvious means just in front of you. It comes from a Latin root, meaning just in front of you. And then there is another word, problem. It comes from a Greek root. It also means just in front of you. The root meaning is the same of the obvious and the problem. Obvious is the problem. That which is just in front of you is the problem, because you cannot see it. Your eyes are wandering into distant lands. The obvious has become the problem. And enlightenment is to become aware of the obvious. And when you become aware of the obvious, the problem disappears. To live a life of no problems is to live an enlightened life. It is a totally different way of being. It has nothing to do with achievement. It has nothing to do with learning. It has nothing to do with effort, practice. The only thing that is needed is to be a little more alert. So that which is in front of you, you can look, see, watch. The solution is closer, very, very close to you, than you can imagine. Don't seek it far away. It exists within you. Once you are settled inside, centered, rooted, I give you all freedom. Go and love. Go and be in the world. Now you will be able to enjoy it. You will be able to taste it. And you will be able to penetrate into the deepest possibilities of it. And wherever you go into the realm of death, always you will find the divine there. In love, go deep and you will find God. In food, eat well with alertness, awareness, and you will find God. Upanishads say, Annam Brahm, the food is God. Upanishads say that sex is just a brother, a twin brother of the final, ultimate bliss. A twin brother of the ultimate final bliss, sex, you have condemned it too much. It may be the lowest rung of the ladder, but it belongs to the ladder. The highest rung belongs as much as the lowest. In fact, everything belongs to God and is divine. This is enlightenment, to be able to see in everything the sacred throbbing. Religion is not against anything. Religion is the search to find the holy everywhere, and it is there waiting for you. You have come to the right place. Your mind may like to escape from here, because this is going to be a death to your mind. It is the right place for you, but the wrong place for the mind. It is the absolutely right place for your being, but for your ambitions, your ego, your pride, your stupidities, it is the most wrong place you can find anywhere on the earth at this moment. So you decide. If you want to be stupid, escape. Then the mind will go on befooling you that you are in love and enjoying, and you know you are not enjoying, and you know that you are not in love. Then the mind may go befooling you that you are indulging. You cannot indulge. You are not there to indulge even. You don't exist. You don't have an integrated being in any way. You may wander and deceive. But if you really want to be loved by a woman, and you want a woman to love, and you want friends, and you want to enjoy life, I am giving you the keys to it. the second question. You said that Lao Tse is for the rarest of seekers, then how do you call him total? He is for the rarest of seekers because he is total. The mind is afraid of totality. The mind is always searching perfection. The mind is a perfectionist. Try to understand these two dimensions, the dimension of perfection and the dimension of totality. With perfection, the ego can exist perfectly. In fact, it cannot exist without the dimension of perfection. The ego is always trying to be more and more perfect. And when you want to be perfect, you have to choose. You cannot be total. If you want to be wise, you have to choose. You have to drop foolishness. You have to fight against ignorance. And if you want to be perfectly wise, you have to cut all the possibilities of ignorance, of foolishness, of madness. But a total man is totally different. He is wise in his foolishness. He is foolish in his wiseness. He knows that he is ignorant. That is his wisdom. In him opposites meet. Says Lao Tse, that everybody seems to be wise except me. I appear to be a fool. Because everybody is trying to be wise, trying to be knowledgeable, trying to be intelligent, cutting, hiding, suppressing foolishness. But foolishness has a beauty of its own, if it can be joined together with wisdom. Then wisdom is total. And the greatest wise men in the dimension of totality are always fools also. They are so simple and so innocent that they look foolish. Lao Tse must have looked foolish to many people. He was. He was both. And that is the difficulty. Mind seeks perfection. Who will go to Lao Tse? Nobody wants to be a fool and wise both. And you cannot understand even how one can be both. How one can be both? It is reported of a Sufi mystic that he was traveling and he came in a town and his name has reached. Before he reached, his fame has reached already. So people gathered together and they said, "Preach us something." The mystic said, "I am not a wise man because I am a fool also. You will be confused by my teachings. So better let me keep quiet." But the more he tried to avoid, the more they insisted. The more they became intrigued by his personality. finally he yielded and he said, okay, so the coming Friday I will come in the mosque. It was a Mohammedan village. And what do you want me to talk about? They said, of course, about God. So he came, the whole village gathered. He has created such a sensation. He stood on the pulpit and he asked the question, do you know anything about what I am going to say about God? The villager says, of course, no. We don't know what you are going to say. Then he said, it is useless. Because if you don't know at all, you will not be able to understand. A little preparation is needed. And you are absolutely unprepared. It is going to be futile and I will not speak. He left the mosque. The villagers were at a loss what to do. They persuaded him again the next Friday. Next Friday he again came. He asked the same question. Now the villagers were ready. He asked, do you know what I am going to talk to you? They said, yes, of course. So he said, then there is no need. If you already know, finished. Why unnecessarily bother me and waste your time? He left the mosque. The villagers were completely puzzled what to do with this man. But now their interest was going mad. He must be hiding something. So they again persuaded him somehow. He came. And again he asked the same question. That do you know what I am going to talk about? Now the villagers have become a little wiser. They said, half of us know and half of us don't know. The mystic said, then there is no need. Those who know can tell those who don't know. This is a wise and foolish man. Looks foolish, but is very wise in his foolishness. Looks very wise, but is behaving like a fool. If you understand life, the deeper you go, the deeper you will understand that the whole is worth choosing. That means there is no need to choose. Choice will dissect the whole. And whatsoever you get will be fragmentary and dead. Wisdom and foolishness are together in life. If you dissect them, then wisdom will be separate, foolishness will be separate, but both will be dead. The greatest art of life is to let them grow together in such a balance that your wisdom carries a certain quality of foolishness. And your foolishness carries a certain quality of wisdom. Then you are total. That's why rarest are the seekers who will go to Lao Tse. He will seem to be absurd. Because sometimes he will behave like a wise man and sometimes he will behave like a foolish man. And you cannot rely. And he is not predictable. And nobody knows what he is going to do the next moment. He lives moment to moment. And you cannot make a doctrine out of him. He is not a wise man. You cannot make a doctrine out of him. He is foolish also. That foolishness will disturb you. And he is always inconsistent on the surface. Of course, deep down exists a consistency, absolute consistency. He is so consistent that his wisdom and foolishness are also consistent. But for that you will have to go deeper in this man. Just a surface acquaintance won't do. Just familiarity won't do. You will need satsang. You will have to be in deep participation with his being. Only then you will be able to understand the totality. Buddha is wise. Mahavir is wise. You cannot find a single foolishness in them. They are perfection. Lao Tse is not. Chuang Tzu is not. Lihi Tzu is not. They are contradictory, paradoxical. But that is where their beauty is. Buddha is monotonous. If you understand Buddha today, you have understood him his yesterday also. You have understood his tomorrow also. He is a consistent thing. Clean, logical, moving in a line, linear. But Lao Tse is zigzag. He runs like a madman. If you will understand, as we will go into his sayings, you will understand that he runs like a madman. His assertions don't make sense on the surface. They are the most sensible utterance. But to know the sensibility, you will have to change completely. Buddha is on the surface logical, rational. If you can understand him without becoming a meditator, without flowing into his being, you can understand him. He is understandable, not Lao Tse. This totality, he accepts this world and the other. And he accepts totally. He is not bothered about the other world. He knows that the other is going to grow out of this. That is going to grow out of this. So why bother about it? Live this as beautifully as possible. As totally as possible. So the other will come out of it naturally. It is going to be a natural growth. If you meet Lao Tse, he will be puzzling. Sometime he will say something, some other time he will say something else. He will assert a sentence and in the next sentence he will contradict it. That's why very rare seekers reach to him. That's why there exists no organized religion for Lao Tse. It cannot exist. Only individual seekers can reach him. Because organized religion has to be perfectionist, has to be according to the mind, has to be according to you. Because an organized religion means a religion now more interested in the crowd, more interested in the mob. It has to adjust with the mob and with the crowd. Lao Tse can remain uncontaminated, pure. He does not compromise. His totality becomes incomprehensible. That's why rare seekers reach him, because he is total. More total a person, more incomprehensible he becomes, because more he becomes like God. He is not clear cut. He is not like a garden made by man. He is a wilderness, a forest. With no rules, no plants, unplanted, a wild growth. There is the beauty. Howsoever beautiful a garden planted by man, the man is too apparent there. The hand of man is too apparent there. Everything is planned, cut, planted by man. The symmetry and everything. But in a wild forest, you don't have any symmetry. You don't see any logic. If God is the gardener, he must be mad. Why he grows such a forest? Buddha is like a garden. Garden of a royal palace. Lao Tse is like a wild forest. You can be lost in it. You will feel fear, and danger will lurk on every step, and every shadow will scare you to death. That's why Confucius said, don't go near to him. No one knows his ways. Either he is mad, or he is the most wise man. But nobody knows who he is. The third question, I have a strong desire to merge with the universe, but I remain separated, anxious, homeless. Why? What holds me back and what is to be done? The very desire is holding you back. The intense desire to merge with the universe is keeping you separate. Drop the desire and there is merger. You cannot merge by an intense desire, because the very desire will keep you separate. Who is this who is desiring? To whom belongs this intense desire? An intense desire creates an intense ego and the separation. And who told you that you are separate and you need to be merged? You have never been separate. So why you are chasing yourself? You are merged. Look at the difference of the point of view. Lao Tse says you are merged in existence. You are not separate. You have never been. You can never be separated. How it is possible? You exist in the ocean of the divine, or Tao, or whatsoever you name it. How can you be separate? So first a wrong notion that I am separate, then another wrong notion comes out of the first that I have to merge. And if you try to merge, you will remain separate. Just look and watch and see You have never been separate. Who breathes in you? Do you think you? Who lives in you? You think you? Who is born in you? Have you got any notion? That which is born in you, that which is living in you, that which is breathing in you, is the whole. And these are just thoughts, how to merge. Then you will never be able to merge. Just look at the state of affairs. You are already in it. It is said that when Linchi approached his master and asked, crying and weeping and tears flowing from his eyes, asked how to become a Buddha, the master hit him hard on the face, slapped him hard. He was shocked and he said, what are you doing? Have I asked anything wrong? The master says, yes, this is the most wrong thing one can ever ask. Ask again and I will hit you more hard. How foolish. You are a Buddha. And you ask how to become a Buddha. Once you get into the trap of how to become a Buddha, for millions of lives, you will miss the whole point. And you had always been a Buddha. It happened in Buddha's own life, in his past life. He heard about a man who had become a Buddha. So he went, touched his feet. But he was completely surprised, because when he touched the feet of the Buddha immediately touched his feet. So he said, this is puzzling. I touch your feet because I am an ignorant man, searching and seeking. But why you touch my feet? You are already enlightened. The Buddha laughed. And he said, you may not be knowing. I see you don't know yet who you are, but I know you well. Once I realize that who I am, I realize that what this whole existence is. You may not be aware yet, it may take a little time for you to become aware who you are. Buddhahood is not an achievement. It is just a recognition of who you are. It is just a remembrance. So don't ask me how to merge. And if you have an intense desire to merge, intenser the desire, more difficult will be the merger. Desire is the barrier. You please drop the desire and just look all around. Who are you? God exists, not you. You are a false notion, an idea, a bubble in the head. Air bubble, nothing more. And if there is too much intense desire, nothing happens, only the air becomes hot. A hot air bubble, that's all. Cool down a little. And just look around. You have been always in the ocean. You have never been anywhere else. You cannot be, because nothing else exists. There is no space except God. Art thou. So sooner you realize the foolishness of desire, of merging, the better. You are already that which you are seeking. This is the message of all the awakened ones. You are already that which you are seeking. You are already the goal. You have never left the home. There is a beautiful story. Looks a little profane. But only Zen Buddhists can do that. They love their master so much. They love Buddha so much. They can even afford profanity. There is a story that a monkey came to Buddha. Monkey represents man. Monkey means the mind. The mind is a monkey. Charles Darwin came to know very, very late. But we have always been aware that man must have come from the monkeys. Because he is still monkeys. The mind, you just watch the mind, the constant chattering, and then watch a monkey in the tree. You will feel a similarity. A monkey came to Buddha. And he was no ordinary monkey. He was a king. King of monkeys. That means absolutely a monkey. The monkeys said to Buddha, I would like to become a Buddha. Buddha said, remaining a monkey, I have never heard that anybody has become ever a Buddha. Remaining a monkey, the monkey said, you don't know my powers. I am no ordinary monkey. No monkey thinks that he is ordinary. All monkeys think that they are extraordinary. That is part of their monkeyness. He said, I am no ordinary monkey. What are you talking? I am a king of monkeys. So the Buddha asked, what exceptionally are extraordinary powers you have? Can you show me? The monkey said, I can jump to the very end of the world. He has been jumping all along in the trees. He knew how to jump. So Buddha said, okay, come on the palm of my hand and jump to the other end of the world. The monkey tried and tried, and he was really a very powerful monkey, a very intense monkey. He went like an arrow, and he went, and he went, he went. Months, and the story says the years passed. And then the monkey came to the very end of the world. He laughed, he said, look, very end. He looked down. It was an abyss. Five pillars were standing there to mark the boundary. Now he had to come back, but how he will prove that he had been to these five pillars? So he pissed near a pillar, a monkey, to demark it. Came back, years passed. Then he reached Buddha and he said, I have been to the very end of the world and I have left a mark. Buddha said, just look around. He had not moved at all. Those five pillars were the five fingers of Buddha. And they were stinking. He has been there with closed eyes. must have been dreaming. Mind is a monkey with closed eyes, dreaming. You have never gone anywhere. You have always been here and now, because nothing else exists. Just open the eyes. Just open the eyes and have a look around. And suddenly you will laugh. You have always been rooted in the ultimate being. There is no need to merge. The only need is to become alert where you are, who you are, and drop that stupidity of intense desire. Desire is a barrier. Intense desire, of course, a greater barrier. Desire clouds the mind. Desire makes a smoke around you, a smoky screen, and then you cannot see what is in fact the case. Fourth question, you talked about the harmony of the opposites. I feel that hate kills love and anger kills compassion. The extremes are fighting inside me. How can I find the harmony? You are completely wrong. If hate kills love and anger kills compassion, then there is no possibility. Then there is no possibility of there ever being love or ever being compassion. Then you are caught. Then you cannot get out of it. Because you have lived with hate for millions of lives. It must have killed already. You have lived with anger for millions of lives. It must have murdered already. But look, love is still there. Hate comes and goes. Love survives. Anger comes and goes. Compassion survives. Hate has not been able to kill love. Night has not been able to kill the day, and darkness has not been able to murder light. No. They still survive. So the first thing to understand is, they have not been killed. One thing. And the second thing will be possible only later on, when you will really love. You have not really loved. That's the trouble. Not hate. Hate is not the trouble. You have not really loved. Darkness is not the trouble. You don't have light. If light is there, darkness disappears. You have not loved. You fantasy. You imagine. You dream, but you have not loved. Love. I'm not saying just by loving, immediately hate will disappear. No. Hate will fight. Everybody wants to survive. Hate will struggle. The more you will love, the more stronger hate will come. But you will be surprised that the hate comes and goes and doesn't kill love, rather it makes love stronger. love can absorb hate also. If you love a person, in some moments you can hate, but that doesn't destroy love. Rather, it gives a richness to love. What is hate? In fact, it is a tendency to go away. What is love? A tendency to come closer. Hate is a tendency to separate, a tendency to divorce. Love is a tendency to marry, to come near, to become closer, to become one. Hate is to become two, independent. Love is to become one, interdependent. Whenever you hate, you go away from your lover, from your beloved. But in ordinary life, going away is needed to come back again. It is just like when you eat. You are hungry and you eat. Then hunger goes because you have eaten. When you love a person, it is like food. Love is food. Very subtle, spiritual, but it is food. It nourishes. When you love a person, the hunger subsides. You feel satiated. Then you separate. Then suddenly the movement to go away starts. But then you will feel hungry again. You would like to come nearer, closer, to love, to fall into each other. You eat, then for 4, 5, 6 hours, you forget about food. You don't go on sitting in the kitchen. You don't go on sitting in the mess. You go away. After 6 hours, suddenly, you start coming back. A hunger is coming. Love has two phases to it, hunger and satiety. You misunderstand hate for hunger. Once you understand that there is no hate but only a situation to create hunger, then hate becomes part of love. Then it enriches love. Then anger becomes part of compassion. It enriches compassion. A compassion without any possibility of anger will be impotent. It will have no energy in it. A compassion with the possibility of anger has strength, stamina. A love without the possibility of hate will become stale. Then the marriage will look like an imprisonment. You cannot go away. A love with hate has a freedom in it. It never becomes stale. In my mathematics of life, divorces happen because every day you go on postponing them. Then divorce goes on accumulating, and one day the marriage is completely killed by it, destroyed by it. If you understand me, I would suggest you not to wait. Every day divorce and remarry. It should be a rhythm. Just like day and night, hunger, satiety, summer, winter, life, death. It should be like that. In the morning you love, in the afternoon you hate. When you love, you really love. You totally love. When you hate, you really hate. You totally hate. And suddenly you will find the beauty of it. The beauty is in totality. A total hate is also beautiful as total love. A total anger is also beautiful as total compassion. The beauty is in totality. anger alone becomes ugly. Hate alone becomes ugly. It is just the valley without the hills, without the peak. But with the peak, the valley becomes a beautiful scene. From the peak, the valley becomes lovely. From the valley, the peak becomes lovely. You move. Your life river moves between these two banks. And by, the more and more you understand the mathematics of life, you don't think that hate is against love. It is complementary. You don't think that anger is against compassion. It is complementary. Then you don't think that rest is against work. It is complementary. Our night is against day. It is complementary. They make a perfect whole. Because you have not loved, you are afraid of hate. You are afraid because your love is not strong enough. Hate can destroy it. You are not certain really whether you love or not. That's why you are afraid of hate and anger. You know that it may completely shatter the whole house. You are not certain whether the house really exists or it's just an imagination, an imaginary house. If it is imagination, the hate will destroy it. If it is real, the hate will make it more stronger. After the storm, a silence descends. After hate, lovers are again fresh to fall into each other. Completely fresh. As if they are meeting for the first time again. Again and again they meet. Again and again for the first time. Lovers are always meeting for the first time. If you meet second time, the love is already getting old, stale. It is getting boring. Lovers always fall into love. Every day fresh. Young. You look to your woman and you cannot even recognize that you have seen her. So new. You look at your man and he seems to be a stranger. You fall in love again. Hate does not destroy love. It only destroys the staleness of it. It is a cleaning. And if you understand it, you will be grateful to it. And if you can be grateful to hate also, you have understood. Now nothing can destroy your love. Now you are for the first time really rooted. Now you can absorb the storm and can be strengthened through it, can be enriched through it. Don't look life as a duality. Don't look at life as a conflict. It is not. I have known it is not. I have experienced it is not. It is one whole, one piece. And everything fits it in it. Just you have to find how to let them fit. How to allow them fit. Allow them to fit into each other. It is a beautiful whole. And if you ask me, if there is a possibility of a world without hate, I will not choose it. It will be absolutely dead and boring. It may be sweet, but too sweet. And you will hanker for salt. If a world is possible without anger, I will not choose it. because just compassion without anger will have no life in it. The opposite gives the tension. The opposite gives the temper. When ordinary iron passes through fire, it becomes steel. Without fire, it cannot become steel. And the higher the degree of temperature, greater will be the temper, the strength of the steel. If your compassion can pass through anger, higher the temperature of the anger, greater will be it, the temper and the strength of it. A Buddha is compassionate. He is a warrior. He comes from the Kshatriya race, a samurai. He must have lived a very angry life and then suddenly compassion. Mahavir comes from a Kshatriya clan. In fact, this looks absurd, but this has a certain consistency in it. All the great teachers of non-violence have come from the Kshatriya race. No Brahmin has preached non-violence. Only one Brahmin we know, who is known as one of the avatars, Parusram. He was the most violent man the world has ever known. The Brahmin, the most violent. And Kshatriyas, 24 Tirthankaras of Jaina are all Kshatriyas. Buddha is a Kshatriya. They talk about non-violence, compassion. They have lived violence. They know what violence is. They have passed through it. Even if a Brahmin tries to be non-violent, his non-violence cannot be more than skin deep. Only a Kshatriya, a warrior, who has lived through fire, has a strong compassion, the possibility of it. So remember, if inside your heart extremes are fighting, don't choose. Allow them both to be there. Be a big house, have enough room inside. Don't say that I will have only compassion, not anger. I will have only love, not hate. You will be impoverished. Have a bigger room. Let both be there. And there is no need to create a fight between them. There is no fight. The fight comes from your mind, from your teachings, upbringing, conditioning. Because the whole world goes on saying to you, love, don't hate. How can you love without hate? Jesus says, love your enemies, and I tell you, hate your lovers also. Then it becomes a complete whole. Otherwise, Jesus' saying is incomplete. He says, love your enemies. You hate only, he says, love also. But the other part is missing. I tell you, hate your friends also. Hate your lovers also. And don't be afraid. And then by and by, you will see there is no difference between the enemy and the friend. Because you hate the enemy and love also. You love the friend and hate also. That is only a question of the coin upside down or downside up. Then the friend is the enemy and the enemy is the friend. Then simply distinctions disappear. Don't create a fight inside. Allow them both to be there. They both will be needed. They both will give you two wings. Only then you can fly. The last question. Love may be superb. He may be the very peak of truth, but his very height renders him useless for ordinary people like us. Can't it be said, on the other hand, that Mahavir and Moses and Muhammad are much more practical and helpful? They are much more practical, much more helpful. But they are helpful because they don't change you completely. They compromise. They don't transform you totally. They look helpful. They are practical, that's certain. The Muhammad or Moses, absolutely practical. Because with your mind, they fit. That's why they look practical. Whatsoever you think is practical, they also think is practical. Laosa is totally different from your mind. And that is the possibility of transformation. With Muhammad, you will not be transformed. You may become a Mohammedan. You may become a good man. You may become virtuous even. But you will remain on the same track. The dimension will not change. With Mahavir, you will remain the same. Better, but the same. Modified, but the same. Refined, painted, renovated, but the same. With Laosa, you will be destroyed completely and will be reborn. His death and resurrection . Try to understand it, why it is so. Because you can understand Mahavir, his calculation is of your mind, his logic is not beyond you, that's why he looks practical. And it is not a coincidence that all his followers became businessmen. Calculating, mathematical, practical people. It is not a coincidence that how all Jainas became businessmen. More mathematical, more clever, calculating. It is not a coincidence that the Jews are the most calculative man on the earth, the most calculative community, clever. Jains and Jews, they are almost same. Jains are the Jews of India. Why it is so? Moses is practical. Mahavir is also practical. I am reminded of an anecdote. It belongs to the very beginning of the world. God was in search to find a community who can take his 10 commandments. The world was going a little chaotic, and morality and ethics was needed. So he approached many communities, but nobody accepted. He reached the Hindus and said that I have to offer 10 commandments to you. This is a whole philosophy of life. And Hindus asked, for instance, just tell us about 1 commandment. And he said, be true. be honest. Hindus said it will be difficult in the world of Maya. In this illusion, one meets untruth also. Sometimes, in this world of dreams, how can one be always true? It will be difficult, and why create unnecessary difficulties? He asked other races. Some people said that it will be too much not to be adulterous, because life will lose all interest. Adultery gives life an interest, a fantasy. No, it will be too much. Then life won't be worth living. And he became frustrated. From everywhere he was rejected. And it is said then he approached Moses. And he said, I have got 10 commandments for you. Now he was afraid because this was the last race. Would you like to have them? He was expecting that he will ask, Moses will ask, what are these commandments? But he never asked. He asked, what is the price? How much it costs? And God says they are free of price. And Muhammad says, then I will have 2 sets of them. Calculative. Mathematical, clever, intelligent. Jews are only 2% in the world, but they get 18% Nobel Prizes. 2% people and 18% Nobel Prize. It is a very, very difficult phenomenon. People, but they run almost the whole world. And everywhere rejected, everywhere condemned, but they are so practical and so clever. The 3 persons who have ruled this whole century are all Jews. Marx, Freud, Einstein. 3 persons who have ruled the whole world, they are all Jews. Why it happens so? Simple, not impractical. Laozi is impractical. Laozi in fact praises impracticalness. There is this story. Laozi is passing with his disciples and they come in a forest. And hundreds of carpenters are cutting trees because a great palace is being built. So the whole forest has been almost cut, but only one tree is standing there, a big tree with thousands of branches. And so big that 10,000 persons can sit under its shade. Laozi asked his disciples to go and inquire why this tree has not been cut yet when the whole forest has been cut and deserted. The disciples went and they asked the carpenters, why you have not cut this tree? Carpenters said, this is absolutely useless. You cannot make anything out of it because every branch has so many knots in it. Nothing is straight. You cannot make pillars out of it. You cannot make furniture out of it. You cannot use it as fuel. Because the smoke is so dangerous, to the eyes. You almost go blind. This tree is absolutely useless, that's why. They came back, Lao Tse laughed, and he said, be like this tree. If you want to survive in this world, be like this tree, absolutely useless. Nobody will harm you. If you are arrested, you will be cut. You will become furniture in somebody's house. If you are beautiful, you will be sold in the market. You will become a commodity. Be like this tree, absolutely useless, then nobody can harm you. And you will grow vast and big, and thousands of people can find shed under you. Lao Tse was passing from a town. All the young men of the town were forced to be enlisted in the military. They came across a hunchback. Lao Tse asked, go and inquire why this man has been left and not enlisted into the military. The hunchback said, how I can be enlisted, you see? I am a hunchback. I am of no use. The disciples came and Lao Tse said, remember, be like this hunchback. Then you will not be enlisted to murder or to be murdered. Be useless. Lao Tse has a different logic altogether from your mind. He says, be the last. Move in the world as if you are not. Remain unknown. Don't try to be the first, otherwise you will be thrown. Don't be competitive. Don't try to prove your worth. There is no need. Remain useless and enjoy. Of course, he is impractical. But if you understand him, you will find that he is the most practical on a deeper layer in the depth. Because life is to enjoy and celebrate. Life is not to become a utility. Life is more like a poetry than like a commodity in the market. It should be like a poetry, a song, a dance, a flower by the side of the road. Flowering for nobody in particular. Sending its fragrance to the winds. Without any address, nobody in particular. Just enjoying itself, being itself. Lao Tse says, if you try to be very clever, if you try to be very useful, you will be used. If you try to be very practical, somewhere or other you will be harnessed. Because the world cannot leave the practical man aloof, alone. Lao Tse says, drop all these ideas. If you want to be a poem, an ecstasy, then forget about utility. You remain true to yourself. Be yourself. Hippies have a saying that do your thing. Lao Tse is the first hippie in the world. He said, be yourself and do your thing and don't bother about anything else. You are not here to be sold. So don't think of utility. Just think of your bliss. Be blissful. And if something flows out of your bliss, it is okay. Share it. But don't force yourself just to be an utility, because that is how suicide happens. One kills oneself. Don't be suicidal. All the teachers of the world will be more practical than Lao Tse. That's why they have much appeal. That's why they have great organizations. Christians, almost half the world has become Christian. Mohammedans, Hindus, Jains, Sikhs, they are all utilitarians. Lao Tse stands alone, aloof. Lao Tse stands in a solo existence. But Lao Tse is rare and unique. And if you can understand him, you can also become rare and unique, and the ways to be ordinary. Then you become extraordinary. The ways to be just the last, and then suddenly you find you are the first. The ways not to claim for the credit, and then nobody can take it from you. The way to is to exist as a non-being, as nobody. And then, in a subtle and mysterious way, only you and only you become somebody. Somebody the whole existence feels blessed with, feels blessed by. Somebody with whom the whole existence celebrates. Enough for today.